Let's begin in Australia, in the heart of Western Sydney, and that attack on the police headquarters by Fahad Khalil Mohammed Jabbar, the 15-year-old Iraqi Kurdish boy, killed Curtis Ching, a police accountant, in an attack motivated apparently by a mix of religion and politics.
Fahad Jabbar was killed after this firefight with a security officer. Moments earlier, he'd shot a police accountant dead. Police believe Jabbar was encouraged by a small group who met with him at the Parramatta Mosque in the hours before.
Police sources have told the ABC that several of the five individuals arrested in police raids on their homes this morning had been seen in the company of 15-year-old Fahad Khalil Mohammed Jabbar at Parramatta Mosque on Friday. Police allege four are directly linked to the fatal shooting of Curtis Ching.
On the day he died, Jabbar spent 4.5 hours at Parramatta Mosque, a small prayer hall police believe he regularly attended. The chairman of the mosque, Neil Al-Kadomi, disputes the boy was a frequent worshipper.
We don't know the boy or where he lived. If I find anybody or suspect anybody, I'll go to the police straight away.
Unfortunately, our community may be seen as a threat. We are not a threat. We are part of the solution.
Well, Curtis Ching's friends have been praying at the spot where he was murdered. Meanwhile, leaders of the Muslim community have been helping police investigate the terror attack. To help us understand, let's welcome back Professor Samina Yasmeen, Director of the Centre for Muslim States and Societies at the University of Western Australia. Professor Yasmeen has been an advisor on integration to coalition and Labor governments and is co-editor of the recent book Muslim Citizens in the West. Samina, welcome back to the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you for having me.
Samina, one of the more intriguing things is that Fahad Khalil Mohammed Jabbar was actually a young man of Kurdish background. Now, of course, in the popular mindset, the Kurds are the enemies of extreme Salafis. So how did a young Kurdish boy end up becoming a deadly warrior for this cause?
I think we need to move away from the ethnic identity of the person. Kurdish background is, in my view, not relevant in this understanding, because if we look at the Muslim majority areas, you could belong to the same ethnic community but could have very different ideas about what does it mean to be a Muslim, what does it mean to be a member of that ethnic community, and then also your view on what's happening around the world. And these young people, when they are in Australia, they're not just simply Iraqi Kurdish born in Iran, they're Australian citizens. So really the question we have to ask is, how are they shaping their identities, or how the environment is shaping their identities and their understanding of their place in Australia, their relationship to Australia, to law enforcement agencies, to the wider community, and how they identify their relationship with what they see as the wider Islamic Ummah.
This is a very good point, and you speak as editor of the recent book, Muslim Citizens in the West. I'm wondering, Samina, whether there has now become a specific identity, in inverted commas, of Muslim in Australia.
Unfortunately, not. The events around the world, especially since 9/11, have created a perception of a Muslim identity. In Australia, the dominant view of Islam has been it's different from the dominant Western liberal society values. It is somehow violent, it's somehow oppressive, and it's somehow not in line with the values of the Western society. But when we look within the Muslim community, there are many identities. There are people who are very comfortable with being Australian. In fact, they're proudly Australian. Mm. They're locally born Australians, and they go on living their lives like any other Australian citizen. Then there are others who are not at all fitting into the society. They do not feel Australian. They have a sense that the wider community has targeted Islam, and they take it at one level very personally. Then at another level, they take it as an attack on their community. So they become more of individuals who feel that they have to do something to set things right. And then there are people who I would say are in the middle space, where they're quite comfortable fitting into the economic spaces, fitting into political space, but in the personal spaces they are either very ethnically oriented or they're very religiously oriented. So basically, you can't really say there's one Muslim identity. Because if it was there, we've got nearly 500,000 Muslims in Australia. Either all of them would be militants or none of them would be militants.
In the case of Farhad Jabbar, all teens get a bit rebellious. Many feel alienated. But in your understanding, what pushes someone like Farhad Jabbar into murder?
Well, we started doing some research in terms of how do young Muslims feel about the current wave of focus on Islam. And one thing that we have come across is their sense of not belonging. And I think it comes partly from the spaces in which they grow up, because they only interact with other Muslims who have similar ideas, but it also grows out of the media coverage. So part of the problem comes from the space in which they find themselves in. But there's another problem, which is that they are exposed to information about Islam and being a Muslim, which is very globalized information. And it is the globalized militant information. Unfortunately, again, if you go into Muslim majority states and see the experiences of how youth have been radicalized, there are examples, for example, in Pakistan, where some people have claimed that if you give them a youth 13, 14-year-old child, they can turn them into suicide bombers within half a day. So you tell a young man who actually doesn't know about Islam, his parents may be very busy earning their living, family is still struggling from the impact of migration, and at the same time dealing with this wider concern about Muslim community in Australia. And someone comes to them and says, you know, brother, you're being targeted because you're a Muslim and because there is a caliphate, and why don't you do something to support that caliphate? Why don't you do something for the Muslim Ummah? They're really being sold an idea of Islam, which is not really Islamic. But these young people have very little information pool to actually look at that information critically and see whether it's true or not. And so they're more likely to be taken in by that.
Samina, the Parramatta Mosque, the place where Farhad Jabbar worshipped, it is on the surface run and managed by moderate Muslims, and yet these cells, these extremist cells, seem to get into the congregation. I mean, what explains the disconnect in a mosque, you know, that, as I said, is apparently run by moderate people, but yet it becomes this ground zero for radicalizing these vulnerable people?
We need to be very careful not to associate mosques directly with militancy. Mosques are spaces where Muslims go for their prayers. Because they are the places where people get together, they provide chances to any kind of thinking. Effectively, mosques are not necessarily the site of radicalization. But it doesn't necessarily mean that those who are being radicalized outside do not feel the right to come to the mosque. In fact, because it's a place where they can come and pray, they feel that by being there, they are somehow validating their Muslim identity. In case of Jabbar, like, what I find very instructive is that he goes there, says his Friday prayer, then he dons the robe, and then he goes and engages in that horrific act. This is very similar to acts of a lot of other Muslim militants who wait for the Friday prayer. After the sermon, after the prayer, they'll engage in acts that they think are protecting Islam. So he was obviously encouraged to go to the mosque, say his prayers, and then engage in this act. I think mosque was used as a place. Mosque was not the place where radicalization took place. There's a serious danger in associating mosques, and for that matter, even Islamic schools or Islamic study circles, as the spaces where radicalization takes place. If we look at the way young people have been radicalized again elsewhere, you don't need those spaces. You can do that in social circles.
Well, Samina, yes, the flip side, of course, is that Friday prayer is also an opportunity for imams to preach the kind of integration and coexistence that you have been working on so diligently for many years. But does that happen enough? I mean, that's the good side of devout mosque attendance.
Look, it absolutely happens. I would not say that there aren't instances where people would talk about quote-unquote oppression of Muslims, but it's amazing how mosques really are the places for prayer. If we look at the way mosques operate in Australia, with very few exceptions, normally people would go there, listen to the imam, talking about different issues. They're not necessarily hardcore political issues. The other bit that I'm concerned about is that we somehow think that mosques are the only places where the ideas are acquired and countered. Imams do their best that they can to help people. They're more like social workers, but these ideas are also being presented by people who are not in the mosque space.
Always a wise voice on this issue, Professor Samina Yasmeen, Director of the Centre for Muslim States and Societies. Samina has advised several governments, Labor and Liberal, on issues of integration. Samina, thanks again for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much for having me.